You're listening to The Review, first broadcast on the 11th of August 2012 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Review, coming to you from Studio One here at Midori House on Monocle 24 with me, Emma Nelson, and Gillian DeBias.
And coming up on today's programme, we'll be hearing what book lovers have been tempted to buy in Bogota, San Francisco, and Moscow.
You can see the floor hasn't been treated in 20 years. It's splintering up and gives you splinters if you sit on it. Walls haven't been painted in a long time, but that's how we kind of like it.
We'll also be heading to Europe, where festival season is well underway. None place more so than in Croatia. The man who made the scene happen will be joining us, and he'll be playing us some of the tracks that are making waves in the Adriatic.
And we'll be meeting the man behind one of London's only Russian and Eastern European art galleries as we delve into our weekly stack of magazines.
So all that coming up this week here on The Review on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to Studio One at Midori House in London. I'm Gillian DeBias and my co-host today is Emma Nelson.
Hi. Hello, Gillian. We are trying to decide whether we shall make this an Olympic-free hour. Should we briefly dispatch with this and then move on to the more sublime areas of magazines, books and music? We were talking about the whole... It finishes tomorrow, doesn't it?
I know, and I have to say I'm going to have withdrawal symptoms. I've been loving watching it, loving watching it.
I suspect that there is a rather large hangover just about to plonk on the heads of at least everybody here in London, as the city has been left blissfully quiet. The Olympics have been blissfully exciting and everyone will wonder what to do next week.
I know. Well, I've just been watching it gloriously on all the television screens, which have had amazing angles, but you've been lucky enough to go to one of the venues?
I've been to two of them. I haven't made it to the Olympic Park yet, but I've been to XL and I've been to the, whatever it is called now, the Big Dome, North Greenwich Arena, O2, Millennium Stadium, the Big Dome. And I was absolutely struck by, A, the level of sort of audience participation. Last night I can be absolutely honest, cheering on a Mongolian featherweight boxer.
I love it.
I have never cheered. I know nothing about Mongolian featherweight boxing. And I am now none the wiser apart from the fact that I wanted him to win last night. And there is a wonderful sense of bonhomie in the arenas.
But isn't that the beauty of the Olympics? I mean, sports you never, ever thought you'd ever been interested in, suddenly you're obsessed with. I have found myself obsessed with synchronized swimming.
Synchronized swimming?
Yes. I was used to think it was so naff, but I was glued to these monitors. We watched it when we were doing our Midori House special at the Swiss House, a huge, beautiful screen, where you see the cross-section of the pool and you see the aerial view and the orchestration of synchronized swimming. Just, I found mesmerising.
That and water polo, by all accounts, are quite unsatisfying events to watch in the flesh.
Because you need the camera angles.
Is little heads and arms bobbing about. What you say, what you need is to be able to get into the sport and get into basically the mindset of the person who's doing it. And I think the television can only really achieve that. Last night, boxing, not possibly number one on my list of favourite things to see, but I was standing next to a boxing trainer who had been waiting all his life to see these fighters. He'd never seen any of these fighters in the flesh. And he suddenly saw his sort of top 10 favourite fighters all in front of him. And halfway through it, he said, I can't see the angles that I can see on the telly. This isn't right. Yeah, yeah. And one wonders what influence the telly now has on the expectations of a spectator when they go to a live event, that they think that they can get, they'll get the feeling of the place, but they won't actually get the view of the sport that they had once anticipated.
But the beauty, I think, I suppose, is the energy. And I think it was interesting, we were talking to our producer, Katie Bilbao, and while we say that the Olympics are over, we do have the Paralympics. And I think for any of us who haven't got tickets, it's a wonderful opportunity to now go see the events and see some extraordinary sports. So we do have a little more ahead of us.
And some extraordinary buildings as well, and an extraordinary organisation. One thing that also struck me was the fact that when you're inside the arenas themselves, there is no advertising.
That
there is just the London 2012
sponsors.
Absolutely, and it was one thing that you really notice when you go in, that I was in a small bubble where you couldn't be told what credit card to buy, what drink to drink, and what shoe to run in. I was, and it was gorgeous.
Well, I find that interesting because the biggest worry was that these were going to be the Olympics that were taken over by sponsorship, and everyone was coming out and just horrors about it. And I think one of my favorite covers of a magazine was Private Eye, where you see these big armed SWAT squad, SWAT police. They're pointing a gun, and the caption is, "Put the Pepsi can down and no one will be hurt."
Oh, it's absolutely like that. Apparently there was some sort of review or poll done in the United States where 50% of the people who were polled thought that the incorrect footwear brand was in charge, was sponsoring, and they all thought that a small swoosh was actually behind the behind all the branding. So how important and how you know, how pervasive branding is now that you don't even notice it when you see it, but you notice it when it's gone. Yeah. It's amazing. We will notice the Olympics when they are gone as well. We do apologise to anybody who is not transfixed by synchronised swimming, water polo, boxing, and basketball. Basketball was another thing I saw this week, and it was utterly baffling. But then again, I started cheering on the Lithuanians. Well done, Lithuania. Well, they lost, but... It is odd. It is very, very odd. Well, in a moment, we're going to be getting some of the news from the latest book from the bookshops from around the world. We'll be going all over the place today. Where are we going to begin? We're going to Hungary first, I think. So stay with us here on The Review.
London kala Monocle 24 desu.
Lontoosta käsin, tämä on Monocle 24.
London bo, as a Monocle 24.
Londadan, burası Monocle 24.
Londonist, sinä Monocle 24.
London kara, London yori, Monocle 24.
Time now to open the door on a selection of bookshops around the world, perhaps not Hungary, to hear what titles have been selling well this week and get some recommendations.
San Francisco's love dog-eared books in the Mission District for its laid-back vibe and exceedingly thorough selection, particularly of fiction. Manager Ryan Smith spoke to Monocle correspondent Alistair G about Dave Eggers' new novel and, this is where I got it from, some mysterious news in Hungary.
Were you looking for cash or trade?
Trade, please.
Okay, cool. I'll make you a couple stacks and let you know. Feel free to wander around in the interim. My name is Ryan Smith. I'm the manager of Dog-Eared Books on Valencia Street in the Mission in San Francisco. We're sort of low maintenance. We've been here for almost 20 years now, and you know, most of the bookshelves that we have been scrounged up off the sidewalks or, you know, bought from other booksellers that were getting rid of them. You can see the floor hasn't been treated in 20 years. It's splintering up and gives you splinters if you sit on it. Walls haven't been painted in a long time, but that's how we kind of like it. Save money on that end so the books are cheaper. We get lots of people from out of town, lots of tourists, especially from Europe. We get lots of local people who have lived here for a really long time. You know, the whole spectrum. You know, we sell lots of graduate level math books because there's so many people from Silicon Valley who live in the neighborhood and are interested in, you know, books on stochasticity or whatnot. It's a wide variety of people. We sell a lot of art books, we sell a lot of literature and philosophy. So a book that's been doing really well for us is A Hologram for the King by Dave Eggers. 826 Valencia is just down the street, which is his office for The Believer and for McSweeney's, which is his publishing company. And so we're in the neighborhood. He comes into the store pretty regularly. He's a super nice guy. This is a fantastic book. He's a really good writer. It's his first novel in quite a while. He's done quite a few books of nonfiction, and it's been maybe a decade or so since I think he wrote his last novel. It's about the place where we are in the world right now, I guess. It's about a businessman with a family who's working in Saudi Arabia. You know, he's an American, and pressures and complexities of living in the current age. In this book, his prose is much sparer than in his previous writings. I've heard it described as Hemingway-esque prose, but I feel like that's maybe not quite right. But he's written this book very simply and in a very straightforward manner, which makes you believe it, makes you feel that it's honest. Another book that's doing really well for us is Wild by Cheryl Strayed. And she was a longtime writer for The Rumpus and local. And it's about her one-woman journey on the Pacific Coast Trail. She walked the entire length of it as a young woman, which is quite an accomplishment because it's pretty rough going. The book I'm most excited about, and I waited for it for, 6 months before it came out, was Satan Tango by Laszlo Krasznahorkai. He's a Hungarian author, and only a couple of his books have been published in English. This will be the third, although it was his first book written and published in Hungary. and it's about a small village in Hungary. Most of the people have left, and there's only a few people left, and they're all stuck in terrible routines, and some strange visitors arrive with news. I'll leave it at that.
That was Ryan Smith from Dog-Eared Books in San Francisco. What a great book manager. I'd buy a book from him.
We never got to find out what the strange news was in Hungary. I'm massively disappointed. I quite enjoyed the fact that he was so proud about how tatty his shop was. It's like, no, wait, our floor is rubbish. Oh, enjoy it. It's delightful.
It's a great area of the mission. We were there when we were in San Francisco, and it just has such character. And it is a mixture of kind of graffiti and peeling paint. But, you know, a lot of the smart intellectual book reading people I could see comfortably sitting in cafes there.
Taking pride in scrounging, which is often a sort of an unsaid thing in many areas of life, apart from in books.
Yeah, exactly. Well, scrounging books is wonderful. You give them life beyond their first read. It's
absolutely
perfect.
Yes, you don't let them perfect. Gather dust. Let's head now to Russia, to the Tsiolkovsky bookshop in Moscow, named after the imperial Russian and Soviet rocket scientist Konstantin Tsiolkovsky. The bookstore is located in the... I can't say Polytechnical Science Museum, which is where the bookshop is located near the centre of the city.
My name is Yulia and I'm working every Friday at a bookshop named Tsiolkovsky. It is named Tsiolkovsky after famous Soviet scientist and the pioneer of the astronautic theory, Konstantin Eduardovich Tsiolkovsky. Every person who contributes to this bookshop can contribute with a choice, with a thorough and scrupulous and meticulous choice of literature on different subjects to his or her liking. The bookshop is situated in... the heart of Moscow, in the building of the Polytechnical Museum that was founded in the 19th century by the Society of Devotees of Natural Science, Anthropology and Ethnography, and under the auspices of the Moscow University. And then it was a very important centre for cultural and scientific life, and a lot of worldwide known scientists such as Metchnikov, Vavilov and Zelensky gave lectures there. There is a concept behind the bookshop which is quite interesting for Russia because it's an independent bookshop. It means that no matter how different our tastes are, every member of the bookshop, every shop assistant has a right to choose his or her own books. And we try to make the layout friendly to our visitors. That's why we never have more than one copy of one work on our bookshelves, and we try to store the new arrivals on our tables in neat piles so that people can come and see and get acquainted with new literature that we've got. There are books on the history of religion, on Christianity that sell well. There are books on law, there are books on politics and on social studies that sell well as fiction and non-fiction books. But to name a few, one could say that a very successful book is the book of Alex Ross, and the rest is noise, listening to the 20th century. It is a book about the history of music in the 20th century, and Alex Ross is a columnist of the New York Times, and that was the first translation of his work into Russian language.
And that was Yulia from the Tsiolkovsky bookshop in Moscow. An austere place, I thought.
Yes, in the Polytechnic. You will read this.
You will read this. What astonished me was her decision not to have, well, the fact that the shop has decided never to have more than one copy of one book at any one time, because the risk of disappointment is so high when you go in there.
No, I think they have them. They just put them in the back room.
Oh, right,
it makes it feel less like a warehouse and more like a really curated collection
in which
a library.
Case I absolutely take that all back. But we'll be talking Russian and Eastern European art later on in the programme as someone from one of I think it's London's only Russian and Eastern European gallery comes in. And one question I was going to ask him, which has come from that bookshop piece, is what they're talking about is religion and law and politics, austere, hard, ideological subjects, which still seem to fascinate that area. And I wonder whether this will translate into their art.
Well, you try and stay away from national stereotypes, and yet they're unavoidable, really, when it comes down to culture, I feel.
And sneaking in at the back is Alex Ross and The Rest is Noise, A History of Music, which has been translated, which obviously absolute opposite ends of the scale. Finally, for something a little bit different, we'd head to Trilce Bookshop in Bogota, a second-hand bookshop specialising in first editions and special editions books in French and English. It's been around for 20 years, and although not always in the same place, its owner, Guillermo, loves his job so much, he says he would die for it.
Mm-hmm. You are welcome to Brilse. Okay. My name is Guillermo Martinez. I am the owner of Brilse, a bookshop of second-hand books. It's a bookshop specialized in literature, critic of literature, history, art, philosophy, poetry, etc. The name is the title of the important Peruvian poet called César Vallejo, maybe one of the most important poets of Latin America. And we don't know what is the meaning of Trilce. There are a lot of interpretations, but I like the sound of the word, and this is the reason I use it for the bookshop. I've been reader for almost all my life. I love books. For me, are the most important thing of my life. For me, people, the kind of people I would like to meet always is people who read books and who likes and love books. So I is something I always like it to have. Because it's something wonderful to do something you love. Every day you are learning many things and you are knowing wonderful things about the culture, about the people, about the psychology of the people. So it's something you enjoy if you really are interested and you love it, you always will find something wonderful and you will enjoy. It's a very complex business. It's very difficult to get good editions and very special editions, and Bogota doesn't have a strong tradition in this way, or there is no strong tradition of reading even in Colombia. So you just work for a small elite, sometimes if you have very good books, it's nice and it's right and everything works perfect. There are a lot of kind of people who come here. Writers, poets, teachers, there are professionals of different areas. I hope I will die selling books.
Well, alive and well, that was Guillermo Martinez from Trilce Bookstore in Bogota.
I think I'm slightly in love. I think he's wonderful. Not a man you'd want to buy a book from in a hurry,
I just adore the fact that he just loved the sound of the word Trilce, which is why he named the bookshop
Astonishing.
Trilce,
and an absolutely astonishing man. What I love about that piece is that here on The Review, we try to bring you a list in these pieces of what people are buying. We have no idea what Guillermo Martinez sells. We just know that this is a man who would die selling books. And the fact that he has this passion for it, this deep, deep, deep passion, one I suspect would not like to cross him if you came along and said, actually, I'm not much of a reader. I think it might just destroy the poor man. He's the kind of man, though, who inspires one, I would say, to to have on my epitaph, to have on my gravestone, wishes she'd read more books. That really is the kind of man that would inspire me to go back and improve my reading at the moment. Guillermo Martinez from Trilce Bookstore in Bogota, a marvellous man. I've never met him. I'd love to. Stay with us, because coming up after the break, we'll be heading to Croatia to meet the man behind the burgeoning festival scene there.
A bit like a documentary film, but without any pictures. There are some actors, there are quite a lot of musicians.
Festival.
Galleries. Bears.
You are cordially invited to tune in to Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. The show that wants to tell you about the music, art, books, films and media we think you should know about wherever in the damn world you've pitched your tent.
Some people collect shoes and other people collect Ferraris. I collect art.
In the latest edition, we meet friend of every artist, Michael Pepiat, enjoy a Midori House session from Choir of Young Believers, and speak to the two photographers given access all area passes to the training camp of those formidable Point Perfect Chinese gymnasts in Beijing.
The training process is something that's interested us. Everything before the 10 seconds of glory. What kind of person does this? What the training does to them? What does it take to do the impossible?
That's Culture with Robert Bound, premiering every Monday at 1900 hours UK time, right here on Monocle 24.
It started with a shop in London's Marylebone, and now Monocle has stores in New York, Tokyo, Hong Kong, and a shop in Osaka. And then there's the Monocle Cafe in Tokyo. Come in to find exclusive collaborations with brands we believe in. From Barenna jackets to Porter luggage. Great for gifts, even better for personal treats. And if you're missing an issue from your Monocle archive, we can soon fix that. Visit monocle.com for store addresses and opening times. The Monocle Shop. Carefully crafted design, proud of its provenance.
You're listening to The Review here on Monocle 24 with me, Gillian Tobias, and Emma Nelson.
It's festival season in Europe, and one of the places which has become a mecca for the discerning festival goer in recent years is Croatia. Small boutique festivals throughout the summer combined with a crystal blue Adriatic Sea and scorching sunshine have made it a hugely popular destination for festival lovers from the United Kingdom and indeed all around the world.
Nick Colgan is one of the key players in the creation and development of the Croatian festival scene. He founded the hugely popular Garden Bar in Zadar in 2004, which was followed by Garden Festival, which takes place in early July. For the first time this year, the festival moved to a new location near the town of Tisno on the Dalmatian coast.
Nick also helps oversee all of the other events that happen at the Garden Tisno site across the summer. It's just played host to five different festivals, and tell us more and share with us some tracks which have been huge this summer. I'm pleased to say Nick joins us on the line now from Tisno in Croatia. Welcome to The Review, Nick. It sounds absolute paradise on earth. First question, why did you choose Croatia?
Well, I think Croatia chose me, really. I mean, I came here on a holiday in 2003 to visit a friend of mine that had been, you know, trying to get me over for years and years, and because the war happened and stuff, you know, it was delayed. And then I came in 2003 and fell in love with the place and the coastline and never looked back, really.
What was your background?
My background.
What took you to Croatia? I mean, were you doing this kind of stuff before you ended up in Tisno?
Yeah. I mean, I've worked within the music industry for the last 25 years. You know, my partner's the drummer of UB40, and we ran a production company called Star Company Productions that did various music projects, including the V-Birds with Cartoon Network and stuff. And we put on the Boston Warehouse parties and the in San Francisco, we did the Bulletproof Boat parties. So, yeah, so it was always within music. And then when I came here, it was really like a lifestyle choice, I suppose. You know, I've got two young children and we were looking for a complete change and loved it here. And we opened the garden in Zadar in 2004, which is 9 years ago now.
So, I mean, summer festivals are so popular all over the world. How important is location, and how does that location help you curate a music festival?
Well, I think location is for me, you know, one of the most important ingredients. Obviously, there's a lot of what else goes into it. But I mean, for us, certainly, I mean, we don't, although we are a festival, you know, we have five festivals, we've had five festivals this year. For me, it's more of a holiday with a musical backdrop, really. I think, you know, the majority of people that come to our events come for a minimum of, like, you know, seven days, 10 days, even 2 weeks. So it's So it's slightly different to the norm. It's not, you know, you come and you stay in one place for 3 days. It's you come and you have a look round, and I mean, we're very lucky here. There's like a thousand islands, including the Kawanati Islands, that are in front of us about an hour away, which is absolutely stunning, you know. So we try and push people out to have a look around and fall in love with the place, you know, which is why I suppose people come back.
And you mentioned the holiday feeling, and that's something that was told to us by people who do come over to the festivals. They say it's, you know, some bars, some stages and the sea, and that's it. Do you think the fact that you keep your festivals small is the key to that?
It was a very difficult... After the third year, we started the festivals in 2006 because we wanted to attract, you know, people from wherever over to what we were doing. In 2006, we started, and there was like 400 people, just friends and family, really. But after 3 years, we sold out. We actually oversold. We had about 3,500 people, and we felt then that we kind of like it lost its, you know, its intimate family feel, which I think is extremely important. You know, I think that the fact that we now cap it, we limit the festival to 2,500. Or the festival for 2,500 is a really important part of what we do. You know, it's like I think people come here, they get to know each other, make new friends, meet old friends from previous years, and it gives it that like special family feel, you know, which I think is lost when you look at the more, you know, the larger, more commercial events.
Well, let's have a listen to a bit of the Croatian summer soundtrack. This is Giulio Bashmore and Osev.
We're joined by Nick Colgan, founder of Garden Bar and Festival in Croatia. Nick, this was apparently the tune at the Garden Festival this year. Coming cold out of a radio when you haven't had a sort of an evening's build up to it, it's hard to imagine what it must be like. But when it does start, was it marvellous?
No, I mean it was incredible, really. I mean, I think what Giulio does is, I really think that he's, you know, certainly a big star for the future. But that tune was certainly one that was on most people's, you know, talk. It was a talking point a hell of a lot. So I thought that I'd choose that one because, and also as well, the connection with Future Boogie, who did the programming for us at the festival. I think it certainly has a, yeah, but you've got to be there, Eddie. You've got to be under the stars, like dancing, you know, dancing on the beach at, 5 o'clock in the morning, I suppose, to work perfectly.
You talk about the programming of the festival. I mean, is there a kind of a mission, a philosophy? Is it DJ-led? Can you talk us through it a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, we have worked, right from the start with Future Boogie, Steve Nichols and Dave Harvey. And they've kind of taken over the whole of the programming. This is for the Garden Festival that I'm talking about now. But yeah, it's a real mixture, you know. It's obviously it's very much DJ based, but you know, very different genres of music. You know, I mean, for us, really, there's two types of music: there's good and there's bad. You know, but I think you know that it's always important for us to keep the live element. You know, I think it wouldn't be the same without that. You know,
how do you choose your DJs? Because some of them have been on the scene for some time, haven't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's very difficult for us to say no, really, now. I mean, you know, there's people like Greg Wilson and stuff that have like been here from the first, you know, from the first festival, and Crazy P, who are always, and without them it wouldn't be the same. It really wouldn't, you know. So there's a certain, there's a family element, and we also then try and try every year to add like new blood, or you know, newcomers into the scene to freshen things up, you know, because you know we rely on like a younger crowd coming every year, so you know things change. But I think it's also important to keep the backbone of something that's worked well.
Nick, I'm going to get you to talk about our next track before we hear it briefly. It's White Lamp and a remix of It's You. Why have you chosen this track for us?
I think I've just got a special feeling for this. I mean, there you go. I just spoke about Crazy P, you know, which is Ron Bass Jam's mix. I just think it's a real, like, classic, beautiful, funky tune. You know, I think it says a lot about, you know, sunshine and good feeling, making you feel good, I think.
Let's hear a bit of it. That was White Lamp and the Ron Bass Jam remix of It's You. We're joined by Nick Colgan, founder of Garden Bar and Festival out in Croatia. The general consensus when we heard that track was that we should be sitting on a beach, the sun should be setting, and we should be drinking one of the Garden Festival's sort of signature drinks, which I understand is a pina colada slush puppy. Is that right?
Well, yeah, apparently. I mean, I'm a mojito man myself. But I did hear there was pina colada slush puppies, which is a nice way to spend an afternoon. But yeah, that track's just got sunshine written all over it, hasn't it, really?
When we talk to various festival directors, we find that food is a really important part of the scene. How big is it at Garden Festival, and what's the flavour?
We're here, you know, we've got the Adriatic, so I mean, fish is a big part of our diet. And it's funny, actually, I had a meeting just before we moved to Tisno this year from Petrichina. I had a meeting just before the festivals with the townspeople, restaurant owners included, and they asked me, how do we cater for the English? You know, and I just said, you just got to keep it the same, you know. You got, you know, octopus, a bit of great octopus here, and squid, and it's just, I mean, it's all very good organic ingredients, I suppose, that you lose, you know, when you have to buy stuff from supermarkets and stuff, you know. I mean, tomatoes still taste tomatoes here, and it's all seasonal as well, which is a great thing. But food is a massive thing here, you know. I mean, like, you know, eating is a big part of the culture, you know.
Before we move on to the next track, I wanted to ask you very briefly, how has Croatia taken to you arriving and setting up all these tiny festivals? Do they greet you with open arms, or do they look at Ibiza and think, please don't do that to us?
They did. I mean, they didn't greet us with open arms at all. I think they were quite worried and scared, because I think, you know, I mean, obviously, although we had people from 38 different countries over the season this year, The majority come from the UK, and I think the UK gets bad press, you know, a lot of bad press. So people were concerned. Of course they were concerned, but that soon diminished, really. I mean, that concern diminished into, you know, smiley faces, because there was a headline, actually, after the first festival here. It was like, the English have arrived and they're dancing on the table, but when you ask them to get off, they do, you know, which is, like, just perfect, I think. people here, you know, I think people have, like, learned to, you know, it's a respect thing, and I'm really quite proud, actually, of the relationship now with the local people.
Well, let's hear a bit more music that people are dancing to. This is Inspector Norse by Todd Terge.
And that was Inspector Norse by Todd Terje there. Nick Colgan, why did you offer us that track?
It just always makes me smile, I think. Every time I listen to it, I think it's, you know, one of those classics that you know, makes you smile and move at the same time. I think that's a great combination.
It has got a bit of a bounce to it, I must confess. You're going to... time, I'm afraid, has run out on us today, Nick. There is one last track that we wanted you to introduce, and I have just had to tussle gently for it. Soul Central's Strings of Life, a re-edit of it, but an absolute house classic. I will be raising my hands discreetly in the studio when we play this. What is so great about this song, and why does it keep coming back?
Well, I think, I mean, for me, you know, like you say, I mean, it really is a classic, and I remember this when it first came out. But for the reason why I chose this year was because we did 14 boat parties this year, but on the Future Boogie boat party, this was the final tune, and it was this edit they played, and it just went, the whole place just went incredibly wild, you know. And every time I listen to this, I just get tingles at my, you know, the back of my neck, which is, you know, which is what it should be about, I think.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Nick Colgan, the founder of Garden Bar and Festival, among many other festivals in Croatia, thank you very much indeed for joining us, and enjoy the rest of your summer. Nick, could you introduce this, please, for us while I stand and raise my hands?
Okay. Well, this is the only one, and it's the Strings of Life. Thank you.
And that was Strings of Life, Soul Central, the choice of Nick Colgan, founder of Garden Bar and Festival, among many other festivals in Croatia. Our music reviewer on today's edition of The Review. It's 12:43 in London. In a moment, we'll be taking a completely different direction and heading to an art gallery in London, which has a very Russian flavour.
It started with a shop in London's Marylebone, and now Monocle has stores in New York, Tokyo, Hong Kong, and a shop in Osaka. And then there's the Monocle Cafe in Tokyo. Come in to find exclusive collaborations with brands we believe in, from Barena jackets to Porter luggage. Great for gifts, even better for personal treats. And if you're missing an issue from your Monocle archive, we can soon fix that. Visit monocle.com for store addresses and opening times. The Monocle Shop. Carefully crafted design, proud of its provenance.
It's that time of year when Monocle packs its trunks and its bikinis and heads to the beach to produce our summer resort newspaper, Monocle Mediterraneo. Our large format paper takes the temperature of the region from Liguria to Lebanon, Marseille to Mallorca.
In the design section, we discover a modernist neighbourhood in Naples, a mid-century gem in Ibiza, and a cool stone creation on Mykonos.
In the edit section, we show you how to cook the Mediterranean way with recipes for Turkish and Lebanese specialties, and we interview the food ambassadors that are shaping the restaurant scene in Italy and Greece.
And we head to Tuscany to find out where US soldiers unwind on Europe's only US military-controlled beach.
Monocle Mediterraneo is on newsstands now. It's the only beach companion you'll need this summer.
Welcome back. It's Saturday, so you must be listening to The Review with me, Emma Nelson, and Gillian DeBias.
And it's safe to say that here at Monocle, we're big fans of a good magazine. So every week, we take the time to pore over some of our favourites and to discover new ones. Our guest reviewer this week, sharing his special finds, is Igor Zinatulin, media director of Calvert 22 Foundation, the UK's only non-profit foundation focusing on contemporary art and culture from Russia and Eastern European countries. Welcome, Igor.
Thank you. Thanks for such an exciting introduction.
Not at all. First of all, I want to find out what media director of the foundation does, and does it involve magazines? What do you do?
Well, it's actually quite a new role. I joined the gallery just last year, and now we're working on the launch of a new website, which will be covering cultural news from Russia in English language.
Ah. So
it's actually, it hasn't come into existence as of now, but it seems that we are working quite hard together with you guys, with the Wing Creative team, to make it happen quite soon.
Tell us a little bit more about this gallery, the Calvert. Well, it's a gallery. It's a foundation founded in May 2009, the teeth of the recession. Was that wise, and why was that moment chosen?
I think there are many metaphysical factors standing behind the launch of the gallery, rather than any sort of economic reasoning. It was set up by a Russia-born financier and economist, Nona Matyakova, approximately 3 years ago. And I think it was because of her a real kind of deep and sincere passion towards contemporary Russian culture and contemporary Russian art. And that's why she actually saw this yawning void on the market, and there was nothing like that in London by the time, and she decided to do it as soon as possible. And if you compare the state of affairs with the Russian art in some other countries like France, Germany, or the US, you'll see that it's much more well known and much more well respected in those countries. And for instance, the exhibition called rather blandly Russia at Guggenheim Museum was one of the most successful, one of the most best selling exhibitions ever in the history of this museum. So it wasn't like that in the UK until very recently. And that's why we decided to shed some light on what's going on in the art world in Russia.
And is your background media, or in terms of what you do, what is your background?
My personal background. Yeah, I used to work as editor-in-chief of the Hooligan magazine, mm-hmm, until late 2010, which was at some point a syndication partner of Dazed and Confused. That was pretty much.
So you, like us, love magazine. So we'd love to see what you've selected to show us today. What are your discoveries?
Well, I've got quite a few discoveries. And I would love to show you more Russian magazines. But since it's really, really difficult to find them here in London, couldn't smuggle most of them this time.
Why can't we find Russian magazines in London? Or is this because one would imagine with a huge influx of Russians into the capital, I was surprised that there was no art gallery here until 2009. But right. B, you must want to read something.
Absolutely. I think it was just a very different breed of Russians who were fleeing their country and starting here. So we'll see more youngsters coming to study in London, and I'm sure that one day one or two shops selling some of the cutting-edge Russian titles will appear here on this media landscape.
Before we move on to what you've brought in, which is 99% English language, I think, what is the Russian magazine scene moving towards and interested in?
Well, I would say if you look at it from above, you'll see a pretty familiar landscape with most of the international titles simply translated into Russian. But at the same time, I would say that the most interesting things are now happening in the digital world in Russia. And probably you know that Russia has the largest number of internet users at this moment. In Europe, it's more than 50 million people. And I call it the Russian springboard factor, because some of the industry was stuck on the third world level for such a long time. Mm. Now you can actually jump to the next stage as compared to Europe, for instance. And some of the broadband operators are already introducing 4G networks rather than 3G, like here in London, et cetera, et cetera. So there are many things going on in digital world. And that's why I think that this is the main kind of breeding grounds, the fertile lands where many digital hyperlocal, citizen journalism liked blogs and webzines are now sprouting all over the country. And this is probably one of the most exciting aspects of Russian media landscape to me.
And how is that affecting the market for the physical magazine, which is so beloved of us here at Monocle?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, the physical magazines are unfortunately in some kind of demise at the moment. So we all look forward to new solutions and to new kind of probably narrative which will be introduced into the print-based journalism at some point later. And I think it's a good transition point to one of the magazines I brought today, because I think it tells a lot about how some of the magazines might look like in the near future. And this magazine is called Flee Immediately.
Yes, I must describe it to the listeners. Actually, no, I shall get you to describe it, Igor, because I can hold it easily in one hand and it has no pages. So I shall, no discernible pages. So describe it to someone who's never seen or indeed touched this magazine.
Well, it's a tough task to describe this magazine to somebody who hasn't seen it. But I guess it's really beautiful. It's a gorgeous little gem which was tucked in my bag for about a few weeks. And I never get tired of actually, poring over it again and again. And it's an A1 poster, which can be folded down to A5 pocket size magazine, and it has features and illustrations printed on double side, and they're just spread sporadically all over the page. So you can actually, and it's made, the most interesting thing is it's made of some sort of transparent plastic, so it's not a paper magazine.
People and it, can hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you unfold it? Because I'd love to see what it looks like completely in big size. It, like Igor said, it was an A5 piece of paper, but now it is, I'd reasonably say A1, so it's a reasonably big poster size. How readable would you argue that publication is?
Well, it's a pleasant rustling sound, which is the the most kind of attractive quality of this publication, I would say. But at the same time, it gives you endless possibilities to play around, to experiment with different titles. You see that some of the texts are printed upside down, and you can juxtapose them against each other. So, it's not an exaggeration that you might spend whole months just, playing around with these different texts. And
this is definitely for fans of graphics and printing, right? Because when you go on the website, you don't see much, but I think you see the printing press, which shows how it's printed and folded. So, I mean, these are for real devotees of the printing process.
Exactly. And it's very tactile. It's very very human experience, actually.
It adds a three-dimensionality to a magazine, which is delightful, because you get the same number of pages as you would do in a small pamphlet. Yet, as you say, this ability to pop it in the bottom of your bag. The first thing I thought, actually, when I picked it up was, I could have this in my bag and I can not feel as if I'm carrying a big heavy magazine around with me, and I have a constant source of a little bit of something interesting to dip into, possibly not on a busy underground tube, but something that you can really just delve into.
Sure. Forgive me for not folding that beautifully, but it's going to make too much noise on the radio.
That's true. They were just trying to bring this level of interactivity to the magazine world, and it's really interactive in this kind of pure, a very physical sense. And also, I think it raises the question of collectability. Most people say that the magazine has to be collectible, that there is a collection of magazines. But to be honest, I haven't seen a single collection of magazines at it's my friend's houses. So actually, where does this collection notion stretch? How long do you keep the magazines? And, you know, when you're thinking about that, and also bring some environmental aspects to it, and the increasing costs of print production, of paper print production, I guess that this particular example shows you. It's not a solution. It's not it's not a prototype.
It's an alternative. It's another idea.
It's kind of a suggestion.
When you examine that idea in terms of collectability, it's not a pretty thing to have in your house, because when you look at all the other magazines that we talk about in their collectability terms, you desire them on your shelves. That Gillian has popped it on the floor because we're lacking in space on the table, and it just looks like a piece of paper that someone's dropped on the floor. That's not very pretty, is it? So we're going to have to work our ways around that. Those are compromises to be made.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
There's a magazine that you drew our attention to, which we don't have a physical copy with in the studio, but it's called The Rose, and it's a Russian publication. An excellent website, because it shows you every single page as if you were reading it. Tell us why you pointed us in that direction.
Yes, this magazine called Rose. It was launched by the people standing behind a concept store, which introduced some of the independent British fashion brands to the Russian audience for the first time. And these guys were always obsessed with the idea of educating their customers, educating their audiences, and that's why they decided to came up with a very elegant solution. So they decided to print a magazine devoted to people who are standing behind those brands. And what's most interesting about that is the supplement that you can see if you scroll down this website page. It's called Remeslo in Russian, so it can be literally translated as the craft into English. And it features just three stories about the production facilities of the brands called Harris Tweed, Tickless, and Glavero. So they actually sent their correspondents, their photographer, to spend a week working alongside with the guys who are actually manually crafting all these clothes, these materials. And this is something, a bit of a revelation for the Russian audience. And you know that the Russian market at the moment is an exciting mixture of copycat brands and the Chinese leftovers. So it's very bizarre, and the production of clothes, this manual labor is quite a rare thing.
Well, it's interesting. They're obviously very savvy to the fact that actually people, when they buy something, they want to know the story behind it. They want to know where it's coming from. They want to know how it's made. They just don't want to, spend a lot of money. They prefer, you know, when they do, to know its provenance and where it's from.
Yeah, and it also gives some sort of human dimension, and it gives some meaning to wearing something.
It does. What I quite liked about the subject matter is, I mean, having mentioned, you know, the Chinese leftovers, the people that they're talking to, the likes of Margaret Howell, not flamboyant or ostentatious design by any stretch of the imagination. Is this trying to push the Russians towards a new kind of style?
Yes, I would say as I said, it's still quite a rare example of how do people approach contemporary fashion, contemporary publishing in a very intelligent way. But I guess as many things in Russia, this will probably start a new movement, and there will be many, many other zines, titles, and websites sprouting from all directions. So I think it's a remarkable example.
And finally, we haven't got a great deal of time, so if you can just grab the third one that you brought in. Is it Artlix that you've brought in for us? A magazine which looks more like a piece of art than a magazine about it, I think I read somewhere, and I'd wholeheartedly agree with that comment.
Well, actually, yes. I'm not the biggest fan of the art magazines. I think sometimes they're just a bit portraitous and a bit. The portrait can be a bit dry and bland. Some all this curatorial text, but here again, it's a very, very human title, and they are telling individual stories through personal eyes, and just the sheer elegance and rhythm and flow of the features is very beautiful. So yeah, I do love this magazine for a number of reasons.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave that there, Igor. Igor Zinatulin, media director of Calvert 22 Foundation. Thank you so much for joining us. That's all we have time for this week's edition of The Review.
Up next is the weekend edition with Georgina Godwin, and then it's The Curator, which will be picking the best of the best of this week's programming. And don't forget to tune into the Monocle Weekly, which will be on air tomorrow midday London time.
Our shrinking violet Gillian was saying that omitted to say that The Curator is presented by her glorious self indeed. Today's edition of The Review was produced by Katie Bilboa. It was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Our studio manager was Ben Jay. Thanks to all of them. I'm Emma Nelson.
I'm Gillian Tobias.
We're off to enjoy the sun here in London, what's left of it, but wherever you are in the world, have a very good weekend. Thank you for listening.